The ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, the most anticipated festival in the region, will once again excite audiences with nearly 650 performances September 9th through the 20th. From comedy, dance, and theater to jaw-dropping spectacles across 39 venues all around Rochester. Don't miss amazing performances in the Spiegel Tent, including the world premiere of Cirque du Fringe Claws Out, Shot Sphere, Kids Fringe, and more. And direct from Italy, Sphere, a mind-blowing outdoor spectacle, free at Parcel 5, September 19th and 20th. RochesterFringe.com.
Let's take a minute to talk about Joe Bean Coffee, my go-to for great beans here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador, and I regularly brew their coffee at home. A recent favorite of mine is the natural process Colombian Finca Buena Vista coffee from Edwin Zambrano. This coffee won a 2024 Good Food Award, and I can't help but agree with that assessment. My brews have been full with fruity flavors of pineapple, strawberry, and orange, and each cup has brightened my morning. Next time you need some beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester, or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. For our loyal listeners, save 15% off your next order at joebeanroasters.com with code LUNCHADOR. You can also subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy and receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule, and never be without great coffee again. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care. That music means it's time for another episode of Just Can't Not. This is part of our series of interviews for the Rochester Fringe Festival. The ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, happening September 9th to 20th in scenic downtown Rochester, New York. Go to rochesterfringe.com to find your tickets for events. Also get the app so you can find stuff on the fly. And I'm here with a guest. Guest, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Adele Fico, and I am one of the performers and one of the directors for shows at the Focus Theater.
So first, tell me a little bit about the shows that you're actively participating in.
Oh my God, this is so exciting. So first of all, I'm going to tell you about the all-female improv troupe that I've been working with for the last 3 years. We call ourselves Guilt and Mirrors, G-U-I-L-T. And I'll tell you the story about how we got our name in a second. And we are five women from different demographics and who've come together and who've just melded into this mind of craziness. We do all improv. And it's usually based on something that the audience, an audience suggestion or something like that. And we sort of have a unique take because we bring a sensibility from people in their 20s, in their 50s, and in their 70s. And it's really interesting because we've got a broad range of experience and a broad range of a broad view of the world.
Yeah, I was in it. It's so funny because like the first thing I thought when you mentioned that, I was thinking like thinking back to old school comedy. I'm like, really is a broad range of things. Like when people used to call women broads, like it really is a broad range of comedy. Because it's like, and I love that too, that you have some, there's a different demographic to it too. It's not just one. You know, it's not just people in their 20s and 30s coming together. You're getting a whole range of life experiences. And I think you're going to get a very different experience from that, too.
Well, Chris, the interesting thing about it is I thought, how am I going to relate to a 28-year-old? Yeah. I'm a 73-year-old woman. But we have, the five of us have become really good friends. And we share so much outside, off of stage together.
Yeah.
That only feeds what we do on stage together. This year's show is called Girdles, 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 with an emphasis on the girl.
I was going to say with an emphasis on the girdle, apparently.
Okay. They, you know, I want us to wear girdles on stage, but I'm not getting a really positive response to that from the rest of the cast. you know, anything for a joke, man. Anything. Yeah. Okay.
Well, and I got to say, like, you know, hearing that too, like, that has to be a very rewarding experience too for you to like, hey, like this is a new group of people mm-hmm. in my life and in a different demographic. It has to be so heartening.
You so hit the nail on the head. Okay. That is exactly correct. I've been involved with sketch comedy troupes. I've been involved with improv troupes on and off for most of my life. I've done stand up. I've done it all. And when you, it's a very tentative thing when you begin.
Yeah.
You're kind of feeling each other out and you're wondering who's going to align with your way of thinking. And you don't want to necessarily offend somebody's sensibilities, but you know, and it's finding all of that balance. Okay. And, you know, we were able to do it. And it's miraculous. It really is.
Yeah. So before I want to go into some of your history, but tell me about the other show that you're involved with first.
The other show that I'm involved with is something called The Roustabouts. And oh my God, Chris. Okay. So you know how they always talk about dreams come true, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is a dream come true. In 2019, Roger and I did a teensy, little, itsy, bitsy, tiny sketch show over at School of the Arts in the Ensemble Theater. And it was a one-night deal. It was part of a writing class that Megan Mack and I were offering. And we had a group of people and we said, well, we're going to put on a performance afterward, which is usually what you do. So you take the writing that you've worked on for 8 weeks and then you end up putting it out on stage. And it was, you know, we had 93 people in the audience that night, which was great.
That's awesome.
Okay, so don't misunderstand.
No, that's fantastic.
Yeah, because 93 is going to self-focus right out. It was really successful. And it was interesting because I had been with Estrofest, the all-female sketch comedy troupe,
yeah,
for years. I was one of the founders. But bringing men into the mix changed the entire dynamic and changed the entire sensibility,
yeah,
and changed the entire viewpoint, which was great because you realize that everybody's got a different way of looking at the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we did it. And we're like, okay, we're going to bring the Roustabouts back. But then, pardon me.
No, please. Yeah, no, while you're recovering, I just wanted to mention a shout out to Megan Mack, you know, the real heartbeat of Connections on WXXI. You know, her as a producer, she's so good at what she does at that side of the job, also a very good improviser, but just one of the coolest people around, you know, really making that show happen from the background in a way that people do not understand unless you've been around the show. She's one of the coolest people in Rochester.
Shout out to Megan Mack, my mentor, my friend, my dear, dear, dear sweet Megan, who I just...
Such a strong, smart, dynamic person. She's just, anytime I get to spend with her is just a great luxury.
Oh, it is a totally great luxury. So, Megan was our writing coach. Megan's brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay. Brilliant. And I was the director. Raj was in it and we loved it. 2019. What happened in 2020?
Just a little thing.
Just a little tiny thing happened, yeah, and shut us right down. And for a couple of good 3 years, right?
Yeah.
So when this Fringe came along, Raj called me and he said, let's bring Roustabouts back. And I was like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Can I say hell?
Oh, please. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we can go as far as we need to go.
Please say hell. Okay. I will. And it has been an incredible labor of love and an incredible experience. We've got six phenomenal actors, and Raj is helping to produce and direct. I'm directing. We've got the brilliant Diane Spaker being our costumer, and we're gonna go out there and I hope tear it apart with some very funny stuff, some very provocative stuff.
Yeah, and just so everybody knows, so Guilt and Mirrors is on September 10th at 7 o'clock, September 13th at 7 o'clock, and then the Roustabout shows are on Tuesday, September 16th at 9 p.m., and then Wednesday the 17th at 7 p.m., all at the Focus Theater. You can get all of your tickets on RochesterFringe.com.
So, just, do you think everybody knows the difference between, like, sketch and improv? And
I mean, feel free to throw your thoughts out about it.
I don't want to be, you know, like pedantic or anything. But
No. I think the fine differences are very interesting, especially if you have an interest in it but don't have a ton of experience. So, yeah, from your perspective, like what is the difference and what do you like doing more?
Oh, man. Well, I'll try to figure that out. So improv is straight up coming out of your head at that very moment. No time to think. All you do is listen to what the person said to you before you and respond to that.
And you might have some guidelines or a guiding principle, right, that performance.
For that particular performance. Or sometimes you might play a game. It could be a short form game, meaning that you're sort of in and out of that game in maybe 5 minutes. Or you might do a long form piece of improv, which could be 20 or 30 minutes, okay, of a piece that you're doing. But ostensibly, it is made up on the spot.
Yeah.
Okay. People say, how did you do that? Or people say, you didn't really do that. That was rehearsed. And you know, even when we have our rehearsals getting ready for a show, we stay true to the tenets of improv. And we're like, we plan nothing for rehearsal. We go in, we rehearse, and we don't use that material that we may have used in rehearsal. We never use it again.
It's still practice. I think the practice of
it's the practice
does of require it. Training. And actually, our prior guest who is doing a show at doing Nerds in a Basement show, right, at the Focus, he used the term training to be silly.
You're training to be silly. You're training your mind to work alongside other people's minds.
Yeah.
You're almost training yourself to read their mind. Okay. And you're training yourself, these most important, you're training yourself to listen and respond, reveal, and attack. Okay. Those are the things you're training yourself to
do. Sounds like you're also training to be like, you're training to be an insurgent. Like, you're training to do, like, you know, a city invasion where you're like hiding behind a building wearing camouflage. Be ready to read, be ready to react, be ready to attack. I'm like, oh, geez. I didn't know we were talking about guerrilla warfare here.
Hey, comedy is a very serious business. That's the Focus Theater's motto. Comedy is very serious stuff.
Yeah.
And building comedy is, you know, oh, anybody can be funny. No, anybody can't be funny. It's you either have it inside yourself and then you train. Or you don't have it inside yourself and all the training in the world's not going to help.
Yeah, it's you can get better and you can do things, but there are certain things that are inherent and there's certain things you can develop.
It's worldview.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, if you're very closed, you're not going to enjoy the process either, cuz it's going to feel uncomfortable in a bad way. Instead of uncomfortable in a good way, which is part of performing.
And if you're not walking around the world looking at everything and seeing it as an opportunity to be funny.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sometimes odd things in a grocery store will hit you. You know, something might happen over the green beans. You never know.
I mean, then you walk down the British aisle and you see Gentleman's Relish. How can you not laugh at that? Like, it's a funny thing to look at.
And sketch is different. Sketch can start as improv and then end up down on paper and then written, rewritten, edited, blah, 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 and then end up on a stage.
Yeah.
But sketch is written, rehearsed, memorized, and it's a theater piece.
Yeah. And it can be mini, and it is intended for a certain reason, but yeah, I love the idea that it's coming out of those creative moments, though, and it might get calcified into something that is more rigid, right? It's become a complete thought.
Akin it to Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
All right. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. You hope to God that it works. You pray, please, to the gods of the theater, please let it work. but, you know, it's just a different art form in the whole genre of comedy. You know, and, you know, then there's something like stand-up. I've done it. You throw yourself right out to the wolves.
Yeah, and it's really partway in between, too, right? Where you're reading and reacting to the audience. You are also have a lot of preset bits.
You have preset bits.
But then if you ignore the audience, you're also going to miss out on some of those heights that you can get to by, you know, adjusting on the fly to where they're
exactly.
going.
Exactly. Because there's so many opportunities where you got to drop the script because something has just an opportunity has presented itself to you.
Yeah.
But it is throwing yourselves to the wolves.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I did want to go back to is you mentioned that you've been doing this for a long time. When did you start doing
comedy?
Comedic performance?
In my 20s.
So
okay, in college.
What was your mindset then when you started, you know, when you were starting to do this? What was something that grabbed you that said, hey, I want to do this?
The nicest people in the world. I met the nicest people in the world. I met people that I just admired so very much. And also, I had been a silly child. My mother said, my brothers came out of her womb crying, and I came out of her womb laughing. Okay.
I love that too. And it's, you know, that's kind of it's the honesty of being a parent and the honesty of the kids being, you know, kids are never the same.
No.
And if you try to force it into a box, that's where things can go way worse than, you can be a silly kid.
I think one of the most glorious gifts that we have as human beings is making another person laugh or feel anything. Okay, on a stage, because isn't that what the stage does?
Sure.
Okay, it makes us feel, it makes us reflect, it makes us see, it makes us aware. Okay, and if for 1 hour I can be part of something where somebody laughs and they walk out and they're lighter because of it, hallelujah, man.
Yeah.
I'm all in.
Yeah. So when you started performing or when you joined the group, was that in college and was that like an improv thing?
I joined
thing?
A group, an improv group in college.
Okay.
And so, I worked with some marvelous teachers and I thought, well, God, they're really funny. And I want to be them.
Yeah. You know? So, at the time, like it wasn't the groundswell of what we think of as improv nowadays, how big it is how it has exploded over the course of time. You know, at that point, it was still limited. And I think there was awareness to a point, but it was very limited, right? It would have been the Second City in Chicago,
Second City in I.O.,
That would have been really about
Improv Olympics.
That was known at the time.
I mean, just to put it in perspective, right now, I take classes online from a teacher in California, two teachers in England, two separate teachers in England, and I take classes from Jimmy Curran in Chicago.
How amazing is that?
Okay. Four classes a week, different teachers,
yeah,
different time zones, okay? And I have an opportunity to work. That's how this network is beginning, I think, beginning to grow.
Yeah. Because, okay, like, you saw then, it was, you know, it was the Lampoon and it was Second City and those things. And that was really, that was the core. Now you can, now wherever you are, you have access to just this wealth of different style.
Well, just look at what's happened. And it kind of gags me a little bit, but
yeah,
on the internet, vis-a-vis memes and, you know, people doing funny jokes, doing this, that, and the other thing, it's constant all day, every day, right? Yeah,
absolutely.
We never had anything like that before.
Well, I mean, the fact that we're sitting in my house in a broadcast level recording studio.
I know, I love it.
That you couldn't have done this 10 years ago with the same quality at the same price.
No.
And 20 years ago, this wasn't even an idea that you could do.
Oh, it wasn't even an idea. It wasn't even a little blip in somebody's head.
Right. And now 20 years later, I can have a full, like, that level of thing sitting in my house. And it's something that, like, when I was learning to be a social person listening to radio, you know, I had those, like, dreams of doing something like that.
Well, because ultimately, radio is theater of the mind, yeah?
It is.
Right?
Especially, I mean, you think of the old days, right? When it was, you know, radio plays.
Oh!
Which are amazing.
I mean, War of the Worlds, that's all you have to think about is War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
And what it did to a country. And it was fake.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I think about the first time I heard the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy radio play from the UK. And I'm like, oh, right. This is like beautiful performance. It didn't need video. It didn't need anything else. You could live it there. And there's something about being in that moment, right? Whether it's listening to something great, listening to people be fast on the radio, or, you know, seeing a live performance that you have to be present for. You can't ignore it and really engage with it. It can't be in the background.
Right, right. Exactly. I was just thinking about, you know, what do I like better? Do I like theater of the mind, or do I like theater watching it, or do I like reading it, or do I, you know, and I don't have the answer to that.
I think it's an infinite debate, and each one has its merits.
Each one has its merits, definitely.
Because, like, I know my wife and I, we've been, you know, during some long drives, we've been listening to audiobooks, and it's been really good.
Isn't it a great way to spend a long drive?
Absolutely. Yeah. It gives you something to talk about, lets you, you know, do stuff like that. And yes, I think it has, you know, equal value as reading the book. It's not the same. It's not the same as sitting with a page, because you hear somebody's intonation. You hear that. You're not doing it all in your head. But that's why you can love both. You can love sketch. You can love improv. You can love stand-up. That doesn't mean they're the same. It means that they have different, they've mildly different sensibilities and different ways of attacking it.
There, see, you used that word attack.
I did. Yeah. Look at that. It's a callback.
That's right. It is a callback. So that's Roustabouts and Guilt and Mirrors. Okay. For people who don't know about the Focus Theater.
Yeah. Tell me more about it.
I'm going to tell you how we got our name Guilt and Mirrors.
Please.
So the building that Focus Theater is located in is the old Sibley's department store. No, it's before your time, Chris.
It is, okay. Unfortunately.
Sibley's department store was on the level of a Harrods in London.
Mm.
It was a high quality, expansive, gorgeous department store that had everything from chocolate covered ants to, you know, a full length mink.
Mm.
And everything, and girdles. you could go in as a woman into Sibley's. They would measure you and build you your own special girdle, okay, that all for you fitted to you.
Wow.
My mother used to. My mother would go in and she, all right, I got to go downtown because I'm going to get measured for a new, she used to call it a garment. I'm going to get measured for a new garment. So it was this beautiful building and it was all wood and it was all gilt and it was all mirrors. And every year they had these big pageants that highlighted a different part of history, like, you know, the Renaissance or the medieval times. And they had actors/models walking around in costuming, and they had little mini plays. And, you know, then you could go in and upstairs to the sixth floor and get a to die for strawberry sundae. And it was a fabulous experience. And that was part of Rochester history. That building is part of Rochester history.
Well, and I think too, you know, as the symbol of the decline of downtown in many ways, right? If you had one symbol, that is maybe the one where that's the symbol of the decline of downtown Rochester. To see, you know, see it come alive more now, to me feels like there's this moment of, there's a little bit more positivity. There's an idea that, hey, maybe downtown can be vibrant again. That can be for everybody, not just for the luxury apartment people. It can be for everybody too. And that something like this is part of that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So we were talking about naming the show, and I was explaining to one of my fellow actors that what Sibley's was and what it represented in the community. And I said, it was all gilt and mirrors.
Mm.
And she said, oh my God, G-U-I-L-T, gilt and mirrors. That's a great name for a comedy improv troupe.
Yeah.
And that's how we ended up with Gilt and Mirrors.
Yeah.
Because of the building.
And you can also be gilded and you can be fancy and you can do that too.
We very often wear sequins on stage.
Nothing wrong with that. And I did see, I just looked at a picture of the troupe. I'm like, oh, I know Mona. Like,
of course you know Mona.
One of the coolest people you
can ever
run into. Every time we're under, she's just just such a nice, positive person. Oh. And it's always a genuine interaction when I get the chance to, you know, see her around.
Yeah, Chrissy DeLisle and me and Mona, and we have Deb White, and we have, I hate when I have this moment. M.K. Killen. I don't know if you know M.K.'s.
No, I don't think so.
Work. Oh, she's lovely. Brilliant.
Yeah, and it has to be really nice to be, you know, still, you know, to be coming up with these new groups and working together to come up with something that is, you know, a new performance.
I never thought that 3 years ago I didn't think I would be like where I am right now with all of this.
Yeah. Okay. So I did want to go back to, so you started in college.
Right.
And you started there.
Right.
But I'm kind of interested in is how did that journey progress? Is that something you kept consistently doing? Something that faded in and out of your life?
In and out of my life. And it would always be somehow involved with community theater.
Mm.
And little playhouses here and there. And then I got involved in children's theater. I worked for Jiva Theater for 10 years as their PR person. I took classes at Writers and Books in stand-up, and that's where I got involved in stand-up. And then I found a group of people. I don't even know how we all found each other, but we did. And we decided to start an improv troupe called Fish in Your Pants.
What a great name.
Isn't that a great name? I know. It's a great name. And, you know, then started with the Estrofest, Women of Estrofest, and did that. And then my own one-woman show, which was God Strike Me Dead, if I'm telling a lie, was the name of it. And I did that from 2004 to 2009. Ended up doing comedy. I'm so sorry, but it's my right. Froggy voice. end up doing improv comedy dinner theater with Joey and Maria's Comedy Wedding.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
worked with that troupe for 4.5 years as the Mama Nonna. And
I that had to be like, that had to be just such a fun character to play. Because you can go so big.
Oh. It's just, you know, and nothing like scolding an audience member who's, you know, some guy who might be like in his cups a little bit.
And, yeah.
You know, thinks he can touch you.
Like, and there's no limit to how big you can go because that caricature can play in so many big ways.
Probably one of my most favorite memories was the fact that the Mama Nonna in our troupe always led the dance with the coordinator, the wedding coordinator. We always started out the Vogue, doing the Vogue together.
That's okay. Awesome.
Because Mama Nonna loved the Vogue. She loved the Vogue. Is it the Vogue? Okay.
And that's I love that because it's, and you see that journey. And I was kind of wondering on the one person show, when you created that, is, you know, where were you in your head when you were creating that? Because that's a very different expression. I was talking to somebody earlier in one of the other recordings who she had done 10 different one person shows.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh, that's a journey.
That's a huge journey.
So what for you, when you were coming up with that, where were you?
Okay. So I had done the Joey and Maria's. And that was when Nonna was born in my head. But she was much more a caricature at that point. Yeah. Much more a caricature.
Than a character.
She was, because she was expected to be in that kind of environment.
Of course.
All right. And then I was working with Estrofest, and I had started playing with the Nonna caricature as a character.
Mm.
Okay. And started sort of expanding her life, who she was, where she was, what was her life like, how did she grow up, who was she married to, what were her kids like, et cetera, et cetera. And I got this, I don't know, literally overwhelming desire to write a one-woman show based on three generations of women. The Nona's daughter, and the granddaughter, because that's pretty much my life experience, you know, is that I was very close to my grandmother. I was very close to my mother. And then there's me. And each one of those generations was very different. God knows I was different than my mother. And I was probably more like my grandmother than my mom.
Mm.
And I started playing around with it. And then I thought, well, you know, you got to go big or stay home. So what else does this woman, what else does she interact with? Who does she watch on television? So then a TV character was born out of that. What cooking shows does she want? Then a cooking show was born out of that. You know, what was her influence? Obviously, she was raised by nuns. So what was that like? What were her husband? What was he like? And we got to meet her husband's best friend, who was a cab driver in New Orleans. So that's how all these characters started to. And I swear to God, Chris, I swear to you, I didn't write it. It wrote itself.
Yeah.
It just was like, it took 2 years. But it just poured out of me. And all of a sudden, all these connections, plausible, real, live, honest to goodness connections, these people were real for me.
Mm.
Because you got a lot of characters in your mind when you do comedy. You can't help it. They all live up there, but they're not dangerous or anything.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like it was a really gratifying experience.
It was an incredibly gratifying experience.
I mean, especially like thrill. You're coming with that background, you're really inhabiting the characters. And I love those, you know, it's the little details too, right? You know, and and this deserves what I'm going to give this. Because it was a real, when you said, you're like, oh, it's the Nona character, I'm like, Raised by Nuns, like, really a Nona character? Man, I had to get it out of my head because it was going to sit there if I didn't say it.
Ugh, a Nona terrible. Character.
No, and I love that you did that too, because that is, that's a singular expression, right? This is, you have come up with all these ideas and, you know, performing and creating such a thing, you know, it has to be, you know, one of those things you can look back on and say, yeah, I did that.
I did it. I did, you know, I wanted to do it. I did it. I don't know if I could ever do it again. I mean, in order for one person to be, let's put this in perspective of what it takes to do a theatrical piece, comedy piece. I was on stage by myself. Yeah. There were 11 people backstage supporting me.
Wow.
11 people. Okay. Making it possible for me to be out on stage. Talk about a team. Okay, it looked seamless, right? But there were people moving sets and people, and I had my own dresser, my beautiful, beautiful dresser, Lana Mamano, and my beautiful Lana, who treated me like a precious, precious angel, okay? And I would stand backstage, I'd do these quick changes because they were fully charactered, fully costumed characters that went out there, okay? And we'd have maybe 30 seconds or 45 seconds, and she just keeps saying to me, you're the most beautiful Nona in the whole world. You're the most beautiful Nona. Or she'd say to me, you're the most beautiful Gina, because Gina was the granddaughter. And she would just, and then send me out there, and, you know. So how beautiful to... I mean, I could wax philosophical about it forever, but that you have all these people who say, I believe in you enough that I'm going to be a part of, I'm going to light you, I'm going to give you sound, I'm going to move your, I'm going to get your props out there, I'm going to get your, I'm going to do that for you, I'm going to design for you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's humbling.
That kind of support is, can be daunting too. Because it's a lot. And I know I can say from a personal perspective, when we started this, you know, I've had a lot of friends over time. And, you know, I'm married, so, like, I have that support. But my co-founder, he was asking questions about me as a person. Like, he was supporting me emotionally. And I'm like, I told him, this is really weird. I don't think I've had somebody who actually thought about me that way as a friend and actually thought about me emotionally. And that support was very, almost disconcerting, but.
On the one hand and very gratifying.
Absolutely.
Another.
But it is a lot too, when I could hear it in your voice too, because that support was, it means a lot. To have that much support doing something you care about. It means so much.
I had the best people around me that I knew. And, you know, I think about the lighting designer, Nick Minotaur. First of all, nobody's better. But nobody will support actor or an artistic project the way Nick Minotaur will, or Lana or Tom Wood.
Yeah. And it's,
or and Jack Heldupas, who built my original set. Yeah. They will go to the mattresses to help support an actor.
Yeah. But that's the team too. Right. And that's, you know, that's the same thing with, you know, the performances that you're doing now with the different, you know, improv groups and things, is that it has to be, you have to have mutual support. You have to feel safe. You have to feel that way, or else you can't perform the right way.
And that's see, now you brought us full circle, Chris.
See, look at that. It's a pivot.
Very,
look at that.
Very nice.
Look at that.
Yeah, exactly. I like that. That's why I'm so in love with the Focus Theater, and I teach there, and I direct there, and I act there, and I hang out with the people there because of what that theater represents. It represents a community of people who are all about wanting to do a good thing, a right thing, a fun thing, an enjoyable thing in this community. Now let's take it a step further. Okay. That's what the Fringe Festival does for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
In Rochester.
No doubt.
Okay. The best 2 weeks in the year. That's what I call them. The best 2 weeks in the year, because we open up our arms as a community and we bring in hundreds of artists and designers and directors and bring them all in, and we show our community what we're capable of and what we feel and what we see as human beings artistic through the arts, artistically.
And so many things that are accessibly priced too. Like, this isn't, you don't have to go a theater and pay hundreds of dollars. You're gonna get in at theaters at a reasonable price. There's tons of free events. It's for everybody.
Our shows are $15
right.
a ticket, which is, I think, a reasonably priced ticket when you consider, and I'm not going to name where I was, but I was at a coffee drive-up place, okay, that's a little fancy schmancy, and I had a little coffee and a little Sammy, and that was $13.25.
Right.
Okay, so I feel like for the price of a cup of coffee and a sandwich, you can go feed your mind and feed your heart and feed your soul.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the reasons Gilt and Mirrors is as excited as they are to present to this community is because we all love this community. Every one of us. And as far as Roustabouts go, the same applies.
I really was hoping, from a comedic sense, you're saying Gilt and Mirrors really loves the community. The Roustabouts, we tolerate the community.
Not so much.
The first thing that popped into my head.
Not so much. Okay, here or there. We have disdain for everybody in Rochester, but.
You can see my comedic sensibilities.
Yes, always, I can.
It's like, I love discordant things like that. So I'm going to put out the plugs for the shows again. So okay. Gilt and Mirrors, September 10th at 7, September 13th at 7, and then the Roustabouts on September 16th at 9, September 17th at 7. Tickets on rochesterfringe.com. And what I wanted to end off with was, we talked about, you know, your journey through, you know, starting, and talked about, you know, you're doing your one person show, you're participating in these groups. When you think about performing at this stage of life,
yes,
how do you think about that? Do you take a step back and think about that, and like how does that feel to be performing now versus performing 50 years ago?
Do you want me to tell you the truth, or you want me to tell you the public relations truth?
No, let's go for it.
A year ago, I almost died on the operating table at Strong Memorial Hospital.
Yeah.
And I spent 6 days in ICU with a bleeding heart and bleeding lungs. And I never thought I would be on a stage again. So you ask me how it feels at this point of life. It feels like the biggest Christmas morning I've ever had.
Yeah. Has to feel like taking a breath and just like breathing in everything.
I wake up and I say, thank you, God, for giving me an opportunity to do the thing I love the very most in all the world is to make people laugh.
Yeah.
That's what I love to do. And thank you that you've chosen me to be able to do it. That's the truth.
Well, I mean, I can't think of a better way to end. And if you want to go see passionate performers who, yes, care about the community and are doing things to make Rochester a better place, you know, go see Guilt and Mirrors and the Roustabouts, and go see other shows at the Focus Theater to support them. Support the Fringe Festival. Make sure to go to rochesterfringe.com to check out all of the shows. Get the app so you can find stuff when you're out and about to try different things. Go and experience something and experience passion all around Rochester, including the Lunchador Podcast Network show on September 13th at 3 p.m. at the downtown branch of the Public Library. Also go to lunchador.org to check out all of the shows. And we'll be back next time with more on Just Can't Not.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.